Well may we say God save the Queen, because nothing will save the Governor General.
You know I've searched my heart to prove there's better ways to push and pull. Hey, whatever gets you through these days.
Hello and welcome to Well May We Say, a progressive podcast about Australian politics. This is episode 50 for Friday, 2nd of March, 2018. I'm Jeremy Sear, and each week I'll be joined by a different guest host, sometimes a returning guest host, to discuss with me what's been happening, what's going to happen, and hopefully what we can do about it. Tonight's guest host is Denise Bucco.
Hello.
Hello, welcome back.
Thank you.
I think because tonight's episode is about a bunch of silly things that various politicians have been doing.
Oh, it's about silly things. So tonight we're going to talk about how Fairy McFairyface ran into a wharf this morning in Sydney.
That is funny because of a New South Wales politician who claimed that, look, he didn't want to go with Fairy McFairyface, but like the public had spoken, and of course the public had not in fact spoken, and they had in fact voted for somebody else entirely.
Yes.
And he had just done, like, I really do want to know the story there, why Constance picked Fairy McFairyface.
Me too.
Could his kids, like, or did he just genuinely think, did it just tickle that butterfly? Did he find that whole Fairy Face thing funny?
Still like, funny.
Like, maybe.
Maybe he's one of those people who likes Minions memes.
Sometimes a joke just sticks with you and won't let go.
Well, today it crashed into a Balmain wharf.
Yes. The ferry, if not the joke. The joke, yes. I think, crashed a while
ago. It did. So those are the sorts of silly things we're going to talk about today, correct?
No. Well, we are going to talk about equally silly things, but different, more federal politicians. But before we got there, I did want to point people to Scott Ludlam wrote an excellent piece in The Monthly this week that you can find. Apparently it's free to read, even if you're not a subscriber at the moment, in which he goes through what the experience is of being a parliamentarian at the moment. The highs and the many, many, many lows of seeing horrible things come through that you can't do much to stop, particularly if you're in a smaller party trying to hold the larger parties to account.
You mean being a politician is not all about flying your partner slash not partner places?
Okay, we'll get to Julie Bishop. one thing that he said in there that hadn't really occurred to me before was I suppose it's obvious, but the fact that every politician in that place on a sitting week has to be, they have 4 minutes to get from the little light flashing wherever they are, like the little bat signal or, I don't know, Dick Tracy's watch or whatever the hell it is that they've got nearby that tells them there's a division. And wherever they are, they have to be in the chamber in 4 minutes or be locked out and be judged accordingly. So you can't, they're trapped in that building that whole time. Like, they go late at night.
In a maze.
I couldn't stomach more than like about 20 minutes of Annabelle Crabb's investigate, like wander through the Parliament House about what a mate, but he's so self-satisfied.
Fascinating.
This is one of the worst parts of the Canberra Press Gallery, this sort of, we're part of the inner sanctum, and that's of course why, you know, nobody has any doubt that the Barnaby story would have been leaked a hell of a lot earlier if it was a junior politician access to whom they didn't care about, as opposed to a more senior one where they wanted to get juicy stories from, so they keep him, like, they're really absolute suckers for not.
Yes, not buggering up their access and being that one who knows the secret ways and the funny ways in.
But anyway, Ludlam's piece, I can just, like, that does feel to me like it would be quite impressive. Like, okay, we have normal jobs, you can't leave your normal job, ordinary people can't leave their job, but one where it goes, like, well into the night and, you know, you can't.
The cats would object. The cats object to that.
No matter what you're doing, you have to drop it and be there in 4 minutes. And a lot of those divisions would be pointless too. They'd be, you know, well established, the two parties vote, big parties voting together, and you can't do anything about them. It feels like it would be quite oppressive. Now, I was thinking that, and then I remembered, oh, hang on. If you're a parent with a toddler, you don't even get 4 minutes.
Oh, God. God, no, and you're always on. We have a little thing that lights up or sounds up, and we have to be there.
And the sound is not like a flashing green or red light. It's just it's a noise. So, yeah, for a minute there I was thinking that was quite oppressive. And then I thought, no, actually that's something that, you know, a significant proportion of the Australian population deals with every day.
And you have to do say that the compensation they receive in recompense,
it's very generous, particularly for those generous. Who were MPs before Howard cut the entitlements.
Yes.
So which he grandfathered. So he made sure that when he cut them for other politicians, he didn't cut them for himself.
It's like when in the private sector, when you work in a job and they do a restructure and you get like a little red box around you. So you stay what your salary was instead of getting structured down to something lower, which is a fair system.
So whenever we hear Mark Latham out there ranting about God knows what. Actually, this
potatoes.
Week he was, well, no, this week he was getting stuck into Jane Caro today because she had made a point. You know how Trump said that he's, you know, if he'd been there at the shooting, he would have just run in there, you know, I don't know, smashed a wall and torn the shooter to pieces with his bare hands or whatever the absurd. Like
I believe that.
Who wouldn't? I mean, it's not like Trump has the runs on the board that he can really show that he's definitely a person who runs into physical danger and certainly not a person who dodged, you know, the draft or whatever.
Or anyone who, for example, walks up an airplane.
Covering himself with an umbrella
while his son is like uncovered. Yeah, no.
Maybe his son wanted the rain on his face. We don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, sure. Caro had pointed out how Lord made a comment. I mean, I don't think she's the only person who's made a comment about how ludicrous and unbelievable that claim is. And our beloved Mark Latham came running in saying, why do people have to be so cynical about these sorts of things? And you know, of course he would run in and you know, most of us, it's not.
Mark would too.
Normal people would run in and say, I'm broadly paraphrasing his tweet because I haven't committed it to memory. Anyway, so according to Mark, people are really, really drawn to, and they believe that Trump would do that. They really don't. Like, you
they
don't have
really,
to particularly delusional.
Really don't.
I mean, Trump did say, if only I'd been there, and I feel many of us could agree.
Yes, if only he'd been there.
I mean, because he would definitely stop the shooter. But I can definitely believe Mark would do it. But just remember, when Mark is out there defending the US president, we're paying him an obscene parliamentary pension and entitlements because when he and Howard signed off on cutting them for current politicians, they made sure that it excluded them.
Well, you know, he's just an ordinary guy. An ordinary guy who hates women, hates people.
And we're paying a lot of money for it.
Hates life. He put out a cookbook.
He did with Alan Jones or something.
I don't even know. I don't know.
I don't know if he was in it or he launched
it
with
him. I've tried to block it out of my memory.
Anyway, there's been a couple of updates since last week before we get onto the new wackiness. So in passing, I'll mention the Emma Alberici article highlighting how the Liberals' pitch on company tax rates doesn't stand up to any evidence. And it's not just all the companies that are dodging tax. It's also the fact that...
There was a really interesting development about that at the Senate estimates, wasn't there?
Oh, because in that the ABC admitted that they hadn't been able to find any errors in the article?
Yeah, but it got taken down because of factual errors, but they hadn't actually been able to find any.
It didn't say factual errors. It got taken down because it didn't meet ABC editorial standards.
Oh.
Now, I strongly recommend anybody who hasn't seen the link that I put on Well May We Say to watch the old clip from Yes Minister, Yes Prime Minister. I think it's a Yes Prime Minister episode where they have the BBC head, the equivalent of Guthrie, into a meeting because Hacker desperately wants this interview to be killed. And the BBC is like, we cannot give in to government pressure. And
the BBC cannot be seen to be giving in to government pressure.
We will not be giving in to government pressure. And meanwhile, Humphrey points out all these ways that the government could attack the BBC. Well, and the BBC guy's like, and the people who run it, and the BBC guy's like, but you must see how my position, like, we can't be seen as giving in to government pressure. And then they come in and be like, oh, but there might have been some factual accuracies and security implications and, you know, out of date and like all these really lame.
Oh, goodness. Well, in that case, we'll take it down. Because we can't give in to government pressure.
But factual, I mean, security. What are the security implications? He can't tell you. Anyway, go Google BBC government pressure or something, and it's on Vivo. That you can see the video of it. It's chilling watching that and remembering what the ABC did take it out. So they've put it back up, but they've added in a whole lot of quotes from the Minerals Council and the Matthias Cormann. They basically neutered it and they've taken out comparisons with countries. I think the original one had made a very good point about how the Canadian experience was they had not reduced their tax. Was comparing Canada and Australia or Canada and America and the country that had reduced its corporate tax rate by the most had not seen the highest growth.
Mm.
Because the corporate tax rate is not the only factor on which companies pick where they're going to
absolutely
expand.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
And also,
there has to do a lot of things with available workforce, cost of that workforce, other, you know, other turnover close to logistics and shipping. Like, there's all sorts of things that the technology available. There's so many factors.
Oh, the
fact that there's an internet.
Yes.
Working internet.
Pity we didn't get a good one of those, although it did come out this week that Malcolm Turnbull, who had been claiming as the communications minister in charge of wrecking the NBN, was busy telling everybody that you don't need the top tier of NBN. People are perfectly happy just downloading videos. Because, of course, that's the only thing you can do with the internet. To hell with video calling or anything along those lines. But anyway, he got the other story from this week was that he got the NBN attached to his mansion this week. No delays, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Not this week. It was the details of it came out this week. That he's also on the highest tier. So the communications minister, who was saying you don't need these speeds, of course feels that he needs them for himself.
Yes.
Anyway, so the ABC have put the article, the Alberici article, back, but they have taken out a lot of the comparisons.
Which it's interesting how they
neutered it basically.
Exactly, and it's interesting how the media here in Australia is so fair and balanced, because this week has seen a lot of fair and balanced reporting.
What are you leading towards? Because I was about to lunge into Barnaby being gone, but
well, no, I was about to lunge into a lovely piece in the Sydney Morning Herald / The Age this week.
Oh, where they published? Well, okay, so they published a piece by the Liberal minister to do with infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
Basically saying, well, look, it's the state Labor government in Victoria's fault that we don't get a decent share of the infrastructure funding because the federal government's offered it. As long as we'll build East West Link.
Absolutely.
The thing that voters voted against at the last state election, that this government was elected on a policy of stopping and that they would be breaking a promise to the electorate if they clicked on.
It was such a smash up piece. It was basically, let's tear down the Andrews government. And
but
let's just.
This is federal Liberal, so you'd expect that.
Absolutely. But it's in an election year when the campaign of the Liberals, the state Liberals, has pretty much been all about infrastructure projects not being delivered. For this to go out to press that, you know, here's this big thing, how the Andrews government is pretty much lying about the money that it's received and how much money is available.
It's dubious. They do publish like party pieces. So
absolutely.
As long as they publish the Labor state government's response, which presumably will call bullshit on all of the stupid stuff in it.
I await that with bated breath.
If the state government, the state Labor Party can't write,
I'm not saying they won't write a response to it. I'm saying it might not get the same coverage.
I would hope that Fairfax would. Even like, I mean, I don't expect much from Fairfax now. Fairfax have been neutered by, that they've got rid of most, you know, many of their decent journalists. They don't have the resources to do proper news gathering anymore. So they're a rubbish paper, but they will. I'm pretty sure that they would be at least willing to publish a piece written by a government minister. They don't have to pay a journalist. Of course, it fills in content that they can fill around with advertising.
That is very true. That is true. And then there was another newspaper article this week.
Oh, the Oz's attack on the Greens.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So keeping in mind that I don't know that anybody who votes for the Greens would ever take anything the Oz says at face value. The Oz is a paper, remember, that has published, flat out editorialized that they want to see the Greens destroyed.
Hmm.
I'm not making that up. That's not me paraphrasing. They said, we want to see the Greens destroyed. Like, the
yes.
word destroyed is what they've said. So anything they write about the Greens, I don't think any people who vote for the Greens take seriously. But maybe there are some Labor Greens sort of swinging voters who are the ones who need to switch in Batman in 2 weeks. So this story that leaked, that suddenly appeared this afternoon about a complaint from 18 Greens members, 101 pages against Bethal, the candidate in Batman. The details don't quite match up the Oz's summary of it. So the way the Oz summarizes it is that it depicts a power-hungry perennial candidate who ruthlessly uses proxies to stifle debate, manipulate internal party processes, and undermine fellow members. It accuses her of serious, repeated, often willful misconduct. The last bit was the allegation from the people complaining.
Mm-hmm.
The earlier bits was simply the Australian editorializing about what they actually said. But when you look at what she's alleged to have actually done, according to the Oz article, and keep in mind that this complaint has been dealt with internally by the Greens some
yes.
time ago, and the complainants thought that it would be confidential, and it's not something that suddenly happened this week. It's just
yes.
that now we're 2 weeks out from the campaign, she's locked in as a candidate, and now is the time to try.
Now is the time to, exactly.
This is the worst the Australian can allege, and keep in mind, this is being run against a the Greens candidate in a Greens versus Labour battle. So
yes,
it'd be the fact that this is being used to boost the Labour Party, the party of factional fights, is hilarious. But anyway, so these are the allegations, which the Australian concedes appear frivolous. She's accused of standing in front of another Greens representative at a media doorstop so she wouldn't appear on TV, of passive aggression, of unfriending a party member on Facebook.
Oh my God!
And in typical Greens speak, of projecting, triggering, and making the Darren Branch an unsafe space. The more serious allegations are that she recruited a dramatic influx of new members to the Darren Branch early last year to stack the numbers in favour of her own pre-selection and marginalise perceived political opponents. She got people to join the party.
Seems to be what you would want to do, though.
That she orchestrated a campaign to undermine the pre-selection chances of City of Darabin Councillor Suzanne Newton in the state seat of Preston. Well, reading between the lines, I suspect that that's what this fight is all about. The Greens are a party of human beings. They're not saints, so I imagine that there is
probably... They certainly are not saints.
There probably is war between various people with them. Anyway, that she waged a ruthless internecine war against four Greens members of the Darabin Council and used her social media accounts to support non-Greens candidates running against her. Well... And that's on the front page of today's Oz. So it's just a political mudslinging. And it may well be that Alex Batala is not a person I'd want to be friends with. It may be, or she might be a lovely person. I don't know. This sort of anonymous background. It's just a smear.
It is, and it's one of those things that they're throwing crap at the wall.
Well, they just desperately don't want the Greens to win a seat.
I think it would be great.
Yeah, I don't...
But then I'm not really the audience of the Australian.
Until Alex Batala starts advocating stuff that's against sort of lefty principles, I'm in favour. Like, she's clearly going to... Now, I'm more concerned in terms of the Greens with the state election where they have in Richmond that worker, that person who's campaigning against Greens policy to bring in, like, the...
The anti-sex work.
Yeah, that person.
Oh.
That's more of a worry.
That is very much a worry.
But Batala stands for the Greens principles and will advocate for them in Parliament. And the fact that if there's some factionalism in the Greens, it's not ideal, but I don't know any human political enterprise where there isn't.
Yeah.
It's certainly not something that, like, you know, the Labour Party can stand up and say, well, we don't have that kind of factionalism. No, they have far more formalized issues.
Yeah, they have much more factionalism than that.
So, continuing from last, so the outreach article went back, but slightly neutered, to try and diminish the impact it might have. The other thing, obviously, that happened since we recorded last week is that Barnaby is gone?
Barnaby?
So Barnaby Joyce is no longer the Deputy Prime Minister and resigned, but not from Parliament.
No, he's still in Parliament. So he's, you know... As the question has been asked, how is he going to afford rent now that he's gone down from his $400,000 a year plus extra salary to his $200,000 a year salary? How is he going to afford rent now?
See, I feel like he will manage it. The other thing that is flat out insane is that, you know, how Turnbull ordered an inquiry into Barnaby and Barnaby's conduct.
Mm-hmm.
So because he's resigned as Deputy PM... The major investigation into his conduct has been abandoned. Now, the audit of travel expenses involving him and Vicky Campion is still underway, but they dropped the main inquiry into his conduct. But he's still an MP. He hasn't resigned from Parliament. He is still a member of the National Party.
If he did resign from Parliament, wouldn't there possibly need to be an inquiry about his behaviour?
No. If you're accused of a crime at work and you resign, the police never continue with the investigation. It's immediately dropped. No, wait, that's not true at all. Wait a minute. Hang on. Ordinary people, investigations continue whether you resign or not.
Wait. In fact, I think that you're right there.
And also, amusingly, there's a photograph that was published of Barnaby now sitting back next to Tony Abbott on the back benches. And there was a tweet that came out with that photograph. When you get in trouble in class and you get sat next to the weird kid no one likes.
Yep. That was a fairly accurate, I think, assessment.
That was posted by a Liberal staffer who has now been forced to resign, which is amusing. But you can't have Liberal staffers with a sense of humour. Certainly not ones mocking Barnaby and Abbott. Although I don't know why. It's like they've been exiled to the backbench for a reason.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Barnaby's gone and we have a new Deputy Prime Minister.
oh, that's good. So it has to be an improvement. It has to be someone who's maybe open-minded, who wants to represent the people of the country, who's a good person, right?
You know, it had to be a Nationals member, right?
Oh, okay.
It had to be one of the Nationals in Parliament. Now, George Christensen desperately wanted it to be him.
That's true. In fact, he kind of went on a bit of a rant on his Facebook about the reasons why it should be him.
What did he have to say about the coalition?
Well, he said a lot of things about the coalition. That he wanted to see a national party that prevented Labour and the Greens from the irreparable destruction of our nation. He wanted to be that national party that guaranteed confidence and supply to the Liberal Party.
I'm very disappointed that no matter how many times I vote for the Greens, they have yet to destroy the nation.
Me too. But he believes that the formal coalition is too restrictive. The national party should be in coalition with the people who want to build this country, to feed its people, and to secure a better future for our children. Whitney Houston breaks in into the background here. I believe that you...
Doesn't he mean by building the country, ripping out the Great Barrier Reef to dredge coal through it?
My name builds the country.
Right, okay.
It poisons it, but it builds it, right?
Well, except for the Barrier Reef where it sort of rips it.
Well, and where it destroys the farmland, etc., that he also talks about. We should not let the trappings of politics and positions of power compromise our desire and our ability to deliver. When there are so many important issues and things that need to be delivered, he likes the word deliver, the National Party cannot be distracted by metropolitan fantasies and virtue signaling sidetracks.
Virtue signaling. I love the term virtue signaling. It's the, you bastard, you want to do good things. Why can't you signal your villainy like I do?
Exactly. We need the government to understand that key issues for my electorate are more important to my people and to the welfare of the nation than the politics, quotations, of the day or what inner city socialists might think. My people live in the real world, working in real jobs, producing real wealth to support the soft city lifestyles of those who believe they are better than us.
Righto. The idea that George Christensen's electorate are the people that are supporting the rest of us rather than the other way around is quite comical. So George didn't win.
No, he didn't.
No, Michael McCormack is the new Deputy Prime Minister. Now, I'm assuming that everybody who's listening to this has now heard of some of aspects of Michael McCormack's background. So I did live in Wagga for a chunk of time, and Michael McCormack is the local member down there for the Riverina in southern New South Wales. And he was the editor in 1993 of the Wagga Daily Advertiser. And as is now reasonably well known, he wrote a fairly filthy editorial back in May 1993, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that there are certain things that, even if you sort of apologize for them later and say that your views have moved on, you kind of need to do more to rectify. So, you know, if he'd been out there in 1993 declaring that, you know, I don't know, something Nazi or something, if he'd been out there declaring if he'd been out there declaring the sort of things that Lang Hancock said in that interview to the ABC that are now part of the AB original song, that sort of stuff.
Yes.
So there are things you can say that require more than just, oh, I don't agree with those things anymore. They require a bit more of a... Before I read what he said, A, trigger warning, and B, he did vote in Parliament for the Marriage Equality Bill.
But his electorate voted for it.
Because his electorate voted for it, yeah. He wasn't in favour before then, but he did vote with his... He said he'd vote with his electorate and positively. Wagga, which I had not anticipated would do this, I recall being at a Equality for LGBTI People rally in Wagga in, 2013, 2014, which was preceded by this feral march through the city by the Fred Nile his lot. And there were far more people at that because I think they bust a lot of them up from Albury, but the Catholic diocese down there is quite powerful, and they were running this horrible campaign about opposing equality for gay people. Anyway, but apparently the electorate came in positively, and so yep. McCormack voted for it. That said... May 1, 1993, and parts of this you've heard and parts of this you haven't. Dear readers, writes Michael, a week never goes by anymore. By the way, Michael is the editor of this paper. This is Michael 25 years ago, but he's still an adult who is editor of a newspaper. Like, yes. This is not something he wrote when he was at uni. Dear readers, a week never goes by anymore that homosexuals and their sordid behaviour don't become further entrenched in society. Unfortunately, gays are here, and if the disease their unnatural acts helped spread doesn't wipe out humanity, they're here to stay. On Monday, hundreds of thousands of homosexuals marched through Washington in a demonstration intended to show their demands for equal rights and an end to discrimination should no longer be ignored or denied. How can these people call for rights when they're responsible for the greatest medical dilemma known to man, acquired immune deficiency syndrome?
Wow.
And then he goes on, he has a go at... So, on the very night of the homosexuals' march, that pompous critic Stuart Littlemore on Media Watch on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation had the gall to criticise various newspaper editors across Australia for gay bashing. He ridiculed them for showing some moral backbone and condemning homosexuality. It's just as well some newspapers are speaking up and acting as watchdogs on moral issues. If it was left up to the likes of Littlemore, heaven knows some of the all-embracing attitudes society would be told it was okay to accept.
All-embracing attitudes? That's shocking to think that one could want equality and who embrace those that are different from them.
Now, he says, editorial views expressed more than 25 years ago in no way reflect how my views and community views have changed since publication. Australia in the early 90s was very different to what it is now. I say this not to excuse the culture which once existed. So not himself, the culture which once existed.
Yes.
But to put the quotes in context, as people get older and start families and grow as members of their community, it is completely reasonable their views change over time. But he hasn't ever...
He doesn't actually even say that his views change over time. First of all, he blames the community. He blames Australia. He never takes ownership for the views that he expressed as editor of this paper. And then he doesn't actually apologize for it. He says it's reasonable to think that someone's views might change.
And by the way, he didn't just write this once. He locked in, he doubled down on it because the next week he'd received a bunch of correspondents objecting to his editorial. And he wrote... an editorial, I'm not sorry, why should I be? Dear readers, I'm not about to make any apologies for having my say last week on homosexuals and the death sentence, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, that their filthy habits have been largely responsible for spreading. I have no pangs of guilt for telling the truth about what gays are doing to the world and the decent people who live in it. How sad it is that the very word gay, once used to describe being carefree and merry, is now associated with homosexuality. What an unfortunate contradiction in terms. I've been labelled homophobic by some of the many people who have been moved to write letters.
Accurately. I have been.
Comments.
He forgot the word accurately in there.
Well, he says this. Well, if homophobic can be taken as an intense fear of homosexuals, then that's fine. Call me a homophobe.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, I do fear homosexuals. Or rather, I worry about what further inroads homosexuals will make into society in the years that lie ahead. Now, and he goes on in that vein. So I feel that, A, that is a pretty vicious attack. Double
yes.
down on, that is not just, look, I said some bad stuff 20 years ago, that 25 years ago that I now regret. I haven't seen Michael McCormack stand up and say, and this is something that I challenge all, because you know how the rhetoric is, and this is the same with Lyle Shelton before when he was running the ACL and before he moved across to the Australian Conservatives, to Cory's mob. They will say shit like, no, we believe gay people have equal rights and they should have equal rights and we don't think they should be discriminated against. And then they go off to say all the ways they think they should be discriminated against.
Absolutely.
None of them will say. I would love anybody who's listening to this who may at some point talk to Lyle Shelton or get him on a podcast or something, and same with Michael Moore Cormack, ask them to say the following sentence. Can you say, honestly, I believe... lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people are of equal worth to me. Their relationships are of equal worth to mine. They are equal members of society who do not deserve to be discriminated against for who they are, and they should not be able to be sacked for who they are. They should be accorded the same rights that I have. They are equal to me. Has anyone ever heard Michael McCormack say that?
On top of that, I would actually like Michael McCormack to say, I said horrible things. I said hurtful things.
I did harm.
I harmed people. And for that, I am sorry.
Yes.
I am sorry that I expressed those views. I am sorry I held those views.
I was wrong.
I am sorry I harmed those people. I was wrong. I would like to see him say that. And then maybe I'll consider him being starting on the way to be a decent person.
Yeah, I'm not
maybe
convinced.
Maybe he'll be starting on his path to get to the good place.
I'm not convinced of my... I'm not going to talk about that in a good place. I'm not convinced that my views have changed bit is quite enough given the severity of that.
No, and it's not even my views have changed. Is he saying it is not unreasonable to think that as people grow older...
He has said elsewhere that his views have changed.
Okay, well...
But in a cop-out sort of a way, like...
Yes.
And
he doesn't actually specify what his views are now. He doesn't say, my views have changed. I believe that LGBTQIA people are equal to me. I believe that LGBTQIA people deserve the same rights that I have, that they should not be discriminated against, that... Yeah, you're right. So he has not said my views have changed...
Well, when the New South Wales Liberal State President, Mayor of Hornsby, and former ghoul who brought in the discriminatory amendments to the Marriage Act in 2004, the bastard who brought in the Pacific Solution in the first place, that monster, Philip Ruddock, who is running this religious freedom review that will come back down later this month, when that comes down, and will almost certainly, because of the staggering lack of objectivity that is in a panel run by that person, when that comes down and recommends that religions again have either new rights to harm LGBTI people...
Yeah, I would say further rights.
Or at the very least, that they should maintain the rights to sack people for being gay that they contain, that they maintain at the moment. And when I say religious, I mean like anyone collected... Like... Care Australia, whatever the I forgot the bloody name. The organisation is actually owned by the Catholics that runs
a bunch of senior citizens' homes and NDIS facilities and things like that. Yeah, I know them.
Lots of public
sanitarium who run like hospitals.
No, I think sanitarium own Weet-Bix.
No, they own Weet-Bix, but they also own a private hospital on the North Shore of Sydney. Yes.
I just assumed that Seventh Day Adventists were called sanitarium.
Nope, they own
sanitarium.
But yeah, Seventh Day Adventists who own hospitals, the Catholics who run hospitals, when they cannot sack people for, as you say, being the clerk who works the front desk, who gives information to people who walk in and out, when they cannot sack that woman for being a lesbian, then things will be okay for me.
So I would like to hear if Michael McCormack is distancing himself from those sorts of hateful remarks from 1993. I'd like him to be distancing himself from the equivalent now.
Yep.
Has he learned really? Or like, I want to hear the Deputy Prime Minister come out and say, I oppose gay people being discriminated against at all, including being sacked for being gay.
That would be lovely.
Yeah, I'd like to. That would be reassuring, but I haven't heard that.
No. Nope.
Also, the Guardian's gone and found other editorials where he goes and suggests that women's soccer being in the Olympics is like adding tiddlywinks, and where he advocates for the death penalty.
Tiddlywinks is hard, yo. Tiddlywinks is like playing ice cool. You're flicking something. You're trying to get this little penguin to go through doors. Like, it's hard.
I'm not sure that it counts as an Olympic sport, though. This is what he said. He said... the IOC's decision to include beach volleyball, mountain bike racing, and women's soccer at the 1996 Atlanta Games has surely given hope to tiddlywinks one day becoming an Olympic event. I can see it now, the 2000 Sydney Olympics, with egg and spoon, three-legged and sack races, jelly wrestling, and marbles. Women's soccer.
I would totally, totally go to jelly wrestling at the Olympics.
I feel like women's soccer is not quite the same.
No, I think women, gosh, yeah.
All right. So the other big thing that's been happening this week has been this bonkers thing from Michaela Cash yesterday, where for some unfathomable reason, even Tony Abbott called this a brain snap. But under questioning from Doug Cameron, Labor Senator, in Estimates, about staff hired by her department that had some connection with other Liberal officers, she decided to launch into this really, really weird attack on not Bill Shorten, but on female staff working in Bill Shorten's office.
Of which there are many rumors about them. If you start asking her questions about her staff, she'll go into the many rumors.
Actually, before we get too far into the Michaela Cash stuff, it's actually exactly the subject of what is stuck in Ginger's craw.
Oh, really?
You know you're doing a great job when even Tony Abbott calls you out as having had a pretty bad lapse and a brain snap. So Michaela Cash is going to be pretty proud of her efforts in the Senate Estimates hearing today. When Senator Doug Cameron asked her about her new chief of staff during that Senate Estimates hearing, Ms. Cash appropriately and rationally responded, "If you want to start discussing staff matters, be very, very careful, because I'm happy to sit here and name every young woman in Mr. Shorten's office over which rumours in this place abound. If you want to go down that path, I will do it," she said. As is an entirely appropriate response, the Shadow Minister for Foreign Affairs, Penny Wong, demanded that Senator Cash retract her comment, saying, "It can't be allowed to stand. I think it's disgraceful and sexist, impugning the character of various staff. I would ask the Minister to withdraw." And that's an entirely sensible and professional response to a completely delirious and bafflingly unprofessional statement from Ms. Cash. Even if there is any truth to these rumours, even if she is inferring in this very clumsy way that Bill Shorten has had inappropriate relationships with female staffers, maybe, I think that's what she's getting at. She's not very clear, but that's the read that I take. But she is immediately, like, in that same breath, even if she conjures them out of rumour and into political record, she makes them victim-blaming statements. She talks about the female staff as though the female staff are the ones to blame. The focus is on the female staff and not the alleged behaviour of another member of parliament. I'm gobsmacked. It is a disgusting statement, and I'm very glad that Senator Wong was there to very appropriately, sternly, and emphatically tell Ms. Cash to be quiet. Now, to some credit, Ms. Cash did agree to withdraw her comments, but she did so in the traditional mould of people who've been accused of various crimes and abuses, by which I mean she did not apologise for the action, she apologised if anyone was offended, explicitly saying, "If anyone has been offended by my remarks, I withdraw," which is no apology and does nothing to quiet the rumours that she has attempted to give wing with this ridiculous statement. I would go so far as to suggest he has slandered not just Bill Shorten, but the female members of his staff, and I hope that there are far more significant consequences than just having been told by Penny Wong to shut up.
So basically, don't you dare ask me questions, because I'll threaten you with...
an attack on your staff members.
Yeah.
So, she didn't say... Do you want me to start? I'm happy to name every young woman in Mr. Shorten's office about which rumours in this place abound. He's not attacking Shorten there either.
No.
Like, that would still be a feral thing to do under parliamentary privilege, and the insinuation is there. But what he actually threatens to do is to go after the... If there was something...
Well, I think she is saying it about Shorten. I think she's saying there's rumours about the young woman in his office because of Shorten. I think that's what she's trying to imply.
Say there was. Say Shorten had in some way, and I object to even giving this nonsense the idea that there's something to it, but... Say for the sake of argument that there was Shorten had done something about the young woman's office. Going and naming the victims is not really an approach that supports them. Say they were victims of Bill Shorten, a rapacious tyrant in his office.
Who acted inappropriately. She talked about Shorten and his inappropriate behavior and when she goes after the staff, the women on the staff.
Who she's saying are victims.
Oh.
It's mad. Like, she only said it under parliamentary privilege, so she can't be sued for defamation, but...
But it can be splashed all over the papers.
Cameron suggested that she take a chill pill.
Take what the young people call a chill pill.
Which is a bit bonkers because I feel that the kids were saying that in the 1980s and they're not kids anymore. I feel the chill pill is no longer what the kids say, and Cameron may have... Yeah, anyway.
He watched Back to the Future once. He's hip.
I'm pretty sure that was even old hat before Marty McFly was around in the 80s, in the mid-80s. The problem for Cash... is it was such a weird attack on potential out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it just was really weird that she's been under fire all day and she came up with this brilliant idea, or her staff did, of stopping the media from getting footage of her coming into Senate estimates by getting security to slide a whiteboard between the media and where she was coming in. And you've got to see this footage.
That only would have been better had the whiteboard actually still had, like, Senate secrets written on it from, like, some meeting where they'd forgotten to wipe them off and had, like...
That would have been hilariously incompetent.
But...
The whiteboard that's got all the secrets on it is already in a secondhand furniture shop in Canberra. But how weird, like, you've got to watch the footage of it. Like, they slide out this whiteboard so she...
And they don't even do a very good job of it because they leave, like, a big gap between the wall and the whiteboard. So you still see her walking in.
It was such a weird use of parliamentary security.
Yes.
And Turnbull comes out to defend her, saying that she's being bullied by Cameron. But you can watch the footage.
Did this person, your new chief of staff, will he or she come from some other Liberal political office?
Well, Senator Cameron, again, this person is well qualified and has been taken on board because of their skill set that they will bring to my office.
Oh, it's a simple question. I'm simply asking. Did it come from another Liberal officer, he or she?
Again, Senator Cameron, it is not... You would normally not discuss staff matters for very obvious reasons, I mean, if you want to start discussing staff matters, be very, very careful, because I'm happy to sit here and name every young woman in Mr Shorten's office over which rumours in this place abound. If you want to go down that path today, right. I will do it.
That's some nonsense.
And you, so, well, do you want to start naming them? Do you want to start naming them for Mr Shorten to come out and deny any of the rumours that have been circulating this building now for many,
focus
many
on my questions
years.
Instead of being
dangerous
so silly about this.
To go down
just
and you know
settle
it.
Down and answer the questions.
I feel like describing that as bullying her is a fairly staggering reach.
Especially when you see some of the behaviour in Senate estimates and some of the way that people do actually attack each other for information.
So while we're talking about shitty politicians doing bonkers things, the other one that came out this week was this weird... So, okay, Barnaby had... There was that weird thing where he was claiming that whilst he was definitely having an affair with Vicky Campion and... She wasn't his partner. As if... The fact that she wasn't his wife means that she's not his partner when he's...
Had an ongoing relationship with him that was continuing. Yeah,
and she was paid for like 2 months after leaving or something. Like, yeah. It was so much preferential treatment that ordinary workers don't get. And this is the whole bonkers thing about... Greg Jericho wrote a piece this week about why all of the standard economic rhetoric about what creates wages growth in Australia doesn't hold anymore. And it's largely... Not because we've beaten the bloody unions, beaten them into the ground, and they've lost all the power to stand up and fight for workers. But the people who have been doing that, like when you look at everything they do, they are so entitled. They take whatever they can. Barnaby took everything he bloody could.
Absolutely.
He took it for his, like Campion got all these lovely things. Basically, they are rubbing our noses in it. The same people who are telling us that we just need to, you know, just cop it as it is. Which leads to Julie.
Yes. Oh, Julie.
So, Julie Bishop, she's claimed, according to the Fairfax this week, she's claimed $32,000 in taxpayer-funded family travel for her long-term boyfriend.
Who is also not her boyfriend.
But says that she doesn't have to declare his financial interests in the parliamentary register because he's not her spouse or de facto partner. So, he's enough of her partner... that we have to pay for his travel, but he's not enough of her partner that she has to declare his interests or, you know, even complimentary travel that he receives, those sorts of things that the taxpayers don't pay for.
Again, I feel like this fails all sorts of tests, like basic tests the government puts in, like Centrelink tests.
Oh, none of this matches what they do to Centrelink people. Like, the fact that it is even a thing that Centrelink can ask, which is who you are having sex with, is insane because... as we were discussing with Ginger last week, having sex with somebody does not mean that they are financially supporting you in any way.
No.
People have sexual relationships with people who do not give them money, in which case it is none of Centrelink's business.
Yep.
Centrelink should definitely be concerned if people have income sources.
Yes.
But if people get given money by their parents or they get given money by siblings, people who get money, there are certain ways that they can get given gifts that they don't count as income. But if they have sex with a person, then they automatically assume that person is financially supporting them, which is so insane.
Yes. It's another way of punishing poor people. However, Julie apparently has a partner but doesn't have a partner, just like Barnaby had a partner but didn't have a partner.
Well, he was just saying she wasn't a partner at all. Like, he's at least being consistent. His argument is stupid and contrary to the evidence, but at least it's consistent. Whereas hers is that she has Schrodinger's boyfriend, who is her boyfriend and not her boyfriend, depending on whether it's, you know, financially convenient for the pair of them at the time.
Doesn't that mean that he's both dead and not dead at the same time? That he exists in this sort of limbo, this weird sort of plane?
Schrodinger's cat thing, you don't have to be shooting the cat. Like, it could be any binary, but the cat is both binaries. So the cat could either be her pet or not.
Where
her
does
pet
the box
at the same
come
time.
Into it?
Well, the idea is that the cat is in the box and you don't know where. You fire something that's got a 50% chance of killing it through it, but you don't know if the cat...
Is this just because cats like boxes?
Yeah, they didn't do Schrodinger's dog. The idea is that you don't know until you open it. Until you observe it, you don't know whether the cat is alive or dead.
I mean,
so it's in a state
the blood might give it away.
For the thought experiment, you don't know whether... There's no blood.
Fine. Fine.
Anyway, so... Julie Bishop.
So we're not putting Julie Bishop's boyfriend in a box.
No, but I think we should always remember that these people, this party that advocates for punishing people on social security,
God, right?
are the same people who take whatever they bloody can.
Well, and here's the thing. If they rolled back, like if they rolled in all of these extra benefits they get, all of this extra money they get, how much extra money would they have? Like,
well, that's what that's,
how much money is spent per year on this crap? Well,
on travel stuff, that is all declared. We can find that out, which is how we know that she spent $32,000 on her boyfriend traveling. But what we don't know is he's a property developer and has significant interests, and we don't know what those are, because she's claiming that this person that we are paying to fly around the place is not enough of her partner for it to be relevant. Like, there is a reason we have a register of parliamentary interests. The point of it is so that we know, you know, if there's a decision made that benefits him, we know what his interests are. But she's not declaring them.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
The other awful thing, so I'm not going to do Australia vs. Humanity this week. It's the 50th episode. I feel we can have a week off Australia vs. Humanity. And sadly, we can't have a week off Dutton. The Dutton's latest, not his terrifying super department, although that is its own horror. But did you see that last week he was out there declaring that school curriculums should be changed to enable a rejuvenated civics effort, in his words, so that he could have children reading a pledge of loyalty to Australia. He said it behoves all sections of our society to reaffirm our nation's core values through our words and deeds.
He is more and more disturbing every day. I think he thinks he's A, living in Trump's America, which is one issue. But he also just has this strange, he wants this weird militaristic society where we daub each other in, where we report on our neighbors, where no one is safe, where everyone's looking over the shoulder, where everyone falls into line and his line is the line. I think that's what he has dreams about.
He is terrifying. I do like this quote. This is an incredibly ironic quote. What he means that they will be stopping this, but what he actually said was, the exploitation of children will be the most important priority of the Home Affairs portfolio.
No, that seems legitimate.
Given that there are children but currently being persecuted on the remote island hellhole of Nauru and Manus, that he's claiming that aren't there and so forth. Yeah,
those aren't white children. Those are foreign children and foreign children of color. They don't matter. Non-Christian foreign children. Don't be silly, Jeremy.
A pledge, getting people. So if
pledge allegiance to Australia and to the great potato that leads us.
And the other thing I wanted to leave you with was the hilarious sound effects of Michelle Landry from the Nats today running a defence of mining. Reminding us of Tony being the suppository of all wisdom, this is Michelle Landry.
If we do not exploit our natural advantages, we will fail as a nation and be relegated to the annals of history as a nation that wasted a continent.
The annals of history.
I feel like that's an appropriate summary of the week in Australian politics, to be honest.
The annals of history.
So, what have we learned? We've learned that we have a bunch of really entitled people who are the same people telling the very poor that they need to be kicked in the face more.
Did we learn that?
We already knew it, but...
Oh, there is something else, actually, that I thought of.
Oh, is this a happy place to leave us?
It's sort of a happy place.
Okay.
The Make Renting Fair campaign here in Victoria is doing a big push.
Good.
Because last year, the Andrews government promised all of these rental reforms to... help make renting fair, to give landlords less power, to give tenants, especially long-term tenants, more stability, to give people living in houses more stability. Nothing's been done. The legislation hasn't gone up yet. Things seem to be in limbo. So if you go to Make Renting Fair, it's at makerentingfair.org. And if you go to the website, you'll see a bit of an update on the campaign, what's happened, which is not a lot. And they're asking people to not only sign the petition, but to email their MPs. And there's a letter that you can add a little bit to. I added a bit and sent it. I've gotten responses from a few MPs on it. But just let people know that you still want these changes to happen and that more and more of us are stuck renting. But look, there's something we can do. There's a positive effect we can have. We can be the change. We can force change.
Which brings back to the very beginning. One of the things that is very important in Scott Ludlam's article, he's talking about ways that ordinary people band together making these campaigns, is how these things happen. Because, very, as you said, very, very few positive changes have ever come from inside Parliament.
No.
they come from outside and then they are pushed on the parliamentarians. I got one back from the, I think the Liberal leader of the Legislative Council, sort of fudging it a bit and saying, oh, we're looking into what the detail is. And I'm like, just keep in mind that you won't have the balance right until you have a bunch of landlords squealing and saying they're going to leave the market. That's an indication you're on the right track. When that because one of the main things that needs to happen is that the speculative landlords, the people who are only in there for a quick buck, the people who were never landlords before, who are only landlords now because of the broken market, those people leaving is how we start going back to houses being bought by ordinary people. Those people need to be out. And they won't go quietly.
No.
They will squeal. So that is a sign of success. If they are squealing and chucking a tanty, great. You're on the right path. All right. We probably should leave it there. Thank you, Denise, for coming back. Thank you, Ginger, for telling us what stuck in your craw. Thank you to our Patreon subscribers who keep the podcast running. Thank you, everybody who has left a positive 5-star review on iTunes, if you can do that.
Hooray!
If you haven't done that and you feel like helping the podcast survive,
it would be very appreciated.
Very appreciated indeed. Thank you, me, for editing. And thank you, Robin Gray, for the music, and Alex Lum for the artwork. And we will see you all next week. Good night.
Good night.